Blog Talk Radio.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound.
Say is here we go again. 7 o'clock on the East Coast, June 2nd, 2020. You're listening to a live episode of the Ant Canary Experience. I'm your host, coming to you from southeastern North Carolina, going through this mess again. 2020 has been one really jacked up year. too bad we can't trade 2020 in for another year, because this year right here is just, this is going to be one of those years. I had asked this question last week, when my grandkids grow up and get to, you know, understand and stuff like this, what in the hell am I going to, how can I explain this to them? I have no idea. I have no idea how to explain 2020 to them. Because so far this year, this is June, this year, in two words, this year is fucked up. Let me do this. Let me give you the phone number in case you want to call or vent. I may have to break this show down into two parts, which is fine. The number to call is 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. I'll be here until 8:30. So if you want to call and vent or whatever, I can stop what I'm doing if I'm talking and put you on, and you can get it off your chest or whatever. I got six clips as usual. But last week, when I was putting the show together, I was putting it together Friday. So I wanted to try to have it finished by the weekend. And I was going through the clips and everything and trying to find stuff and information and all that good stuff. Well, had no idea about what was going to happen. Saturday, here in Fayetteville, there was a march. On one of the major streets we have here, it's got the mall is there, Walmart's there, stores and restaurants. It's one of the main drags here. They had a march. I didn't get into the march or anything. I drove past that area, and it was over by the time I got over there. And there were people out. They had signs. So I gave him the peace sign and, you know, waved at him and everything. That was Saturday night. I work, well, I guess you could say Sunday morning. I work third shift Sunday morning. So I work in Raleigh, which is the capital of North Carolina. It's about an hour and 15, 20-minute drive from here. It's not that far. So I usually leave here at about 9-ish. So I can get there on time and chill or whatever before I have to work. And there's no traffic going up there. Now, they had a 5 o'clock march in Raleigh, which I knew about. Matter of fact, somebody invited me to it, but I couldn't make it. It was a peaceful march. It was downtown. It was peaceful. The cops didn't do anything. They did their thing. They had speakers and everything. It was peaceful. As soon as the sun went down, that's when everything went nuts. So I got there about a little bit after 10. So I park in a parking deck, and the parking deck's attached to the job. And downtown, there are apartments downtown. You know, it's a typical downtown. So I get there, I park. I hear the commotion. There's all kinds of stuff going on. So I pull out the camera. Matter of fact, I pulled the camera out before I got there because normally on Saturday nights, since we got this the COVID floating around, there's not a whole lot going on downtown until everything reopens. So there were a lot of cars out. There were a lot of people walking around. So there was something unusual. So I get to the parking deck, park on the third level, and you can just see. Look down, and just there's all kinds of stuff going on. So I filmed it on my raggedy phone. So I filmed it, and I was like, well, I don't think I should go downstairs because it doesn't look safe. Eventually, I ended up going downstairs on the street to see what was happening. There was stuff breaking. I don't know if there was something burning. I don't know if it was tear gas or something, but something had a oily smell like it was burning. Not sure what it was. And on the corner, there was a Dollar General. Someone broke into the Dollar General. I went down. Matter of fact, if you go on my you go on my Facebook page, you can see I think I did three videos. And somebody broke the window. There were people in taking stuff. Then the cops finally showed up. And what do? They rode right past the store. There were people all in the store, and they rode right past it. I didn't want to walk around too far in the stuff because I wasn't sure what was happening. But there were just people everywhere breaking stuff. And the thing is, a lot of the people that were there for the purpose of protesting. They weren't there to smash and loot and all that kind of stuff. And the thing we have to watch with that is you could have undercover cops doing that kind of stuff. You could have people that aren't down with the cause in the crowd instigating shit. You know, there was some reports I read, there were some cities where they were putting piles of bricks on corners just so they can hand out to people so they can throw rocks and all this other kind of crap. I saw a truck give people bottles of water, and I don't know if they were giving them those bottles of water to drink or they were giving them bottles of water to throw. I have no idea. I didn't stick around to find out. So there could be nefarious forces in these protests trying to get stuff instigated, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if they were. So we need to watch out for that kind of stuff. I'm not down with the looting and the pillaging, but I am down for the cause, and I understand what's going on. The other stuff is extra, and I'm not down with that stuff. Sunday night, what the mayor should have done was call for a curfew, because Saturday night into Sunday morning, our building got hit, and there's glass on the first floor of the building, there's glass and everything, and there's a lounge, and there's also a workplace. Somebody just walked. I saw this on the camera. The door was closed, and it has an alarm on the door. But for some reason, somebody got the bright idea of just opening up the damn door and just going in. And since there's a lounge inside, there's coffee machine, drink machine, refrigerators, you know, microwaves. People will make their lunch or whatever. People decided to go in and steal sodas and drinks. They made a mess, but they didn't take anything of value. They just stole sodas. And this was while I was there. I got there early and parked in the back of the building where you couldn't hear anything. I go into the building. I go upstairs all the way to the top floor. Didn't hear anything. Didn't see anything. And they're showing me video of these people just going into the building and just taking stuff. So that was a kind of weird experience that you're at work and you're getting hit and you have no idea what's going on because you can't hear anything or see anything. So Sunday night wasn't as bad as Saturday night was. In Fayetteville, a lot of people may not know about Fayetteville, but they used to sell. They've got this monument downtown called the marketplace, and they used to sell slaves in this marketplace. And you can look it up online. It's kind of hard to describe, but if you look up Fayetteville, North Carolina, online, and just look for the pictures of the marketplace, but they used to sell slaves in those marketplace and that marketplace. That got hit. My nephew was downtown, and he was calling me and telling me about it because he saw my videos on Facebook. And my daughter was calling me, Michelle's all right. I was told I was okay. I was okay. It was just weird, going through stuff like that. And there's a video, I think this is from there. There's a video of somebody trying to burn down the marketplace. They ended up catching on fire themselves. And that shit was crazy. Whoever this guy was, he wasn't too bright. When I say he caught himself, I mean he was on fire. He was up some stairs. He's trying to do whatever he's trying to do. The fire ended up jumping on him. He's in flames. He jumps down the stairs. hits the floor and people are trying to put him out. That's how bad off he was. I have no idea what his condition is or anything like that. It's crazy. So now they've got us under, last night they had a curfew, under a curfew tonight. I work tonight. I leave out of here about 9-ish. And there again, it's weird driving down the street in a city like this, and there's, you know, there are no cars. You're the only car out there. Everything is closed. A few gas stations may be open. A few restaurants may be open, but everything is closed. And that's just like when the pandemic hit, everything got shut down, but we still had to go to work. When you're just driving down the street by yourself, there's nobody out there with you. Had to give us a note to show the cops in case we got stopped. I have yet to be stopped. But I've got the note in the front seat in case I need it. Got my ID badge and everything. So, but I have yet to be stopped. I think there's a curfew tonight. And then Raleigh, when I get to Raleigh, there's a curfew in Raleigh. And there's, you know, I got up there last night. There was nobody out. A few cars here and there, but nobody was out. So that's weird. So like I said, we're going through this all over again, and Kaepernick and Colin Kaepernick was right. I did a show on him. What I need to do is post some of these archive shows on the webpage on Facebook. And I think I'll start doing that next week because I've got to go through them and find them and put them up. But I remember in his interview that he did on TV, it is on tape because I used it in the story, that he said he took a knee to protest police brutality and racism. That's what he said. He said he wasn't taking a knee against the military. He wasn't taking a knee against the flag. But that's what racist assholes do. They knew exactly what he was saying, and they took it and they twisted it to what they wanted to sound like. That's why he's no longer in the NFL. He's been blackballed because he decided to take a stand. The stand he took was absolutely right. A few of us listened, not a lot, because most of the people, they didn't like him. They made up other crap about him because that didn't fit the way they think. But he was absolutely correct on what he said. And we should have listened to him. I don't know if I've said this here before. I might have said it another place. I was a correction officer for 2 years. And then I did security in a hospital for about 12 years. So I've been in security for over 21 years. And the way that officer was on George's back, that's not how you're trained. That's not how you're trained. You can put handcuffs on somebody in that position, but your knee is in the back. You don't sit on a person. You don't put both your knees in their spinal column. You don't put both your knees in the neck. You put your knee there temporarily while you put the cuffs on, and then that gives you a chance to search in the pockets or, you know, looking for something. Then after you finish doing what you're doing, you get up. You don't sit there. You don't put your hands in your pocket. You don't whistle the theme song to the Andy Griffith Show while you got your knee in the back of somebody's neck and he's telling you he can't breathe, and then you sit there with your hands in your pocket and you're looking in the camera like you don't give a shit. Your partner's around, you don't give a shit. You're probably used to doing this kind of stuff before. This time they got you on videotape. You know. And then there are people, actual people out there that think that we're supposed to see this and not say anything about it. No, that's not how this works. Now, y'all could used to get away with that shit back in the day, but y'all can't get away with that shit now. Y'all just not going to sit there and kill people in the street and then walk away from it like, oh, job well done. No, this man didn't do anything. You're not the judge, you're not the jury, and you're not the executioner. You let the judicial system handle all the rest of that if y'all think he did something. And nobody has the right, or nobody needs to die with a knee in their throat because you think they had a fake $20 bill or some bullshit story that they came up with. That's the best y'all could come up with. To kill somebody in the street for something as minor as that. You know. There's a little white guy that killed 9 people in South Carolina. They arrested his ass alive and got him a Whopper to eat on his way to jail because he looked hungry. There are a lot of other white people that do shit worse than what he did. They get arrested alive. They get treated with respect. Matter of fact, that white guy that killed 2 people and did some other shit, they caught him and gave him water. They didn't shoot him. He killed people. But I'm sure nobody pulled a gun on him. This kind of shit right here, people are getting tired of this. If you're too much of a coward, and I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you're too much of a pussy to be a cop, then don't be a cop. You know, this shit, they used to do this shit back in the day with the plantation police. But we don't have plantation police. If you're too much of a pussy to be a cop, then go get another job. I mean, hell, go drive for Uber. Go deliver pizzas. I mean, I don't care. Whatever you do. But if you're too much of a pussy to be a cop, then don't be a cop. Go do something else. Because a lot of those guys, you know, they've got stank-ass attitude problems to begin with. They get a badge and they think they can do whatever the hell they want to do. And nobody can say anything to them because they're the law. You know, those days hopefully are over. Hopefully they're over. Because people are getting tired of seeing other people getting killed in the street. And then they, you know, these cops come up with excuses. Oh, I feared for my life. Like he had a weapon on him. He was going to do this. He was going to do that. Blah, blah, blah. You're making up excuses for the way you act. And then since you know that your boys aren't going to say anything or whatever, and the judicial system is whack, that you'll get off. You get a vacation, you know. And then you come back. Well, if you don't come back, you just go to another department, and they'll take you in. And that happens all the time. You get fired from one department, then you end up going to another department. And nobody says anything. People are tired. This shit needs to come to an end. If y'all going to keep talking about equal, you know, everything in this country is equal, it's not. Everything in this country is not equal. Shit in this country is 95-5. Because everything in this country is not equal. They may have you think that it is, but it's not. Because that one, the one black cop in Minnesota that shot that white woman by mistake, he got 12 years. But I did hear something interesting today on the radio. They gave that clown that killed Mr. Floyd, they gave him third degree. And I'm like, third degree? How the hell are you going to give somebody third degree? I know you couldn't do first. I'm like second. But the way it was explained this morning, you know, every state has different laws. But the way I heard it this morning, I could be wrong. I have to do some more research on it. That there's possibility they gave him third degree on purpose so they can give him, he might get up to 20 years, depending. So they did that. There was a reason why they did what they did. Then I didn't know it. So I'm going to have to research that and see what the deal is, because hopefully he needs to, I wouldn't say give him life, because I don't know if they had a death penalty, but I would say this, and I've said this before. I worked at a prison. Now, They do have, and I've seen this before. When cops get in trouble and they have to send them, you know, to a prison or whatever for their safety, they will keep them away from everybody else. I've seen that. Now, since this guy was an ex-cop, if he does get any time, they're going to keep him away from everybody else. That's just the way it is. They're going to keep him away from everybody else because there's possibility in there. I mean, and it is possible. You know, he's been on the force for a long time. He might have put a lot of people away, and they may be in the prison where they're going to send them to. And if somebody that he put away finds out he's coming, the next sound you hear may be the sounds of shanks being sharpened. I'm just saying. So, you know. So they will keep them separated for a while until everything blows over. So you don't necessarily have to give this clown the death penalty. You can give him life. He may not make it. They may find him dead one day. And I'm not trying to be funny. I'm being straight with you. They may find him shanked somewhere. They put him regular population. He probably won't be there long. They might find him in the shower. They might find him in the laundry room. They may find him anywhere. Because prisoners, you know, at least the ones here, I haven't been in prison in a while, so I hadn't worked at one in a while. They, you know, some of them may get cable, some of them might not, but they do get TV, and they do get access to newspapers. So they know what was going on. So, you know, you might not necessarily have to give them death penalty. They'll take care of that in prison. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it's justice. I mean, what do you expect? You killing people in the street for no reason. What do you expect is going to happen? You know, you're not going to sit there and look in the camera like you didn't do anything and pretend that you know, nothing happened with your hands in your pocket. What you get is what you deserve. That's just the bottom line. Also, I read today that he was born here. From what I understand, I've read a couple of fucking different things, but from the last thing I read, he was born here in North Carolina. I mean, in this where I'm at right now in Fayetteville, and this Saturday, the 6th. They're going to have a program for him in Rayford. And Rayford is about 20, 30 miles away from here, not that far from here. So he must have people here. And they're going to have it here from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And if that's the case, that's going to be packed. Wait a minute. Hold on a second. I don't know if I can hear that. I'm going to have to try that again. Anyway, so if they're going to have his thing here, Rayford's not that big. So you may have people from all over the world coming into this. This is this Saturday. This is this coming Saturday from what I read. June the 6th, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I think that's just for the public. And then I think after that, they're going to have something for the family. So I have to keep everybody posted on Facebook for that, just to let everybody know what's happening. And your president, as usual, was a dumbass. He's a wannabe gangster. He's a wannabe dictator. He's a clown. But, you know, I've always said America got the president it deserved. And it's interesting that all this bullshit. It's kind of because all the stupid shit he did from 2016 to 2019 was a lot of undercover, it was a lot of underhanded, sneaky, stupid bullshit.
So for 3 years, he did a lot of sneaky shit. And then the last year, hopefully this will be his last year. Hopefully it'll be his last 5 months. So now when 2020 rolls in like he's getting hit by a Mack truck. First you got the corona. Then you got the unemployment, the deaths. Then you got the people getting sick, some people dying. Then you got all this other stuff, and now you got this on top of everything else. This clown is way over his head. He just needs to pack. It'll be so nice if you wake up tomorrow and find out that some bitch just packed all this shit up and he just left. He just said screw it, just packed the shit and just went to Florida and stayed there. I resigned. That'd be so sweet. Will it happen? Nah, that's not gonna happen. Be nice if it did. So like I said, that's June 6th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. I'm sure the place is gonna be crazy packed. We've got less than an hour left. So I'm gonna get on with the clips. Maybe I can fit them all in. If not, I can take it over to next week. But let me give you an update on the corona. And I checked this afternoon at 4:30. Worldwide cases are 6,325,303. In the U.S., we have 1,820,523 confirmed cases. In the world, we have 377,460 deaths. And in the U.S., we have 105,644. And that 100,000 figure, that's big enough to fill, the biggest football stadiums in the country of dead people. And does your president care? Hell no. Think he cares? He don't give a damn. He don't give a damn. And the messed up thing about this, we're going to go into the clip. So the messed up thing about this, anybody else was president facing the stuff that facing right now, they wouldn't even talk about reelection. But because of this clown, and they picked the dumbest white guy they could find because they wanted to get another white guy back in the White House. Because after 8 years of a black guy living there, they wanted to get the first white guy they could find. They found the dumbest white guy they could find. The guy that he has no clue whatsoever. But they had to find somebody to put him in there. So they put him in there, the dumbest one they could find. But yet and still, you don't hear anybody talking about these numbers. These are probably some of the worst numbers. They talking about we're going to have another, we can go back to a depression. You don't hear nobody saying anything about that. Why is that? I hope they don't think he's going to get his ass back in. Nah, that's not going to happen. Not going to happen. So, see if I can squeeze these clips in. I might be able to get them in. We'll find out. But before we do, let's do this.
Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
Wrong button. My bad. So let's get. Oh, you know what? I just remember something. We may have to do a part two on this. I just remember. I got a vent. I may be able to get a couple of these, these clips in, but I got a vent right fast. I'm sorry. I forgot. Now, I'm gonna go into this. I don't know how long it's gonna take me, but I'm gonna do. I got something to say. Now, like I said, this weekend with the marches, some of them did get out of hand. I'm supporting the ones that are nonviolent. People are marching in unity. They're marching with a purpose, and they're marching for George Floyd. I disagree with people smashing stuff taking stuff. Matter of fact, one of the Walmarts here in this area got tore up so bad that it's been closed since Saturday. I think it was Saturday. It's been closed since Saturday night. I drive by there going and coming to work, and they've got every door plywood in front of it. The store is closed. They're cleaning up on the inside, but that store has been closed since Saturday night. I do not agree with that. Now, if you go out there and march, I have no issue with it. But the one thing that I'm not going to sit here and listen to is listen to self-righteous white people call black people thugs and looters and, you know, talk junk. When these same white people, their people back in the day have been known to do the same exact thing. And in some cases, they've done worse. So let's don't pretend that all of a sudden, you know, y'all are too good to do stuff like that. Y'all have done stuff like that. Remember Tulsa, Oklahoma? But don't despair. I have a list. I have receipts. Now, I'm not going to do this like I did that one show I did back in the day where I read off every single war that America has been involved in. You talking about that? That was a 3-hour show. That was a long show. I'm not going to do that tonight. But I do have here a list of stuff, of riots that were instigated in this country by white people. So, white folks, let's don't jump on a high horse and start talking smack when a lot of y'all can't go into a subway without having a submachine gun or a rocket launcher strapped to your back. So you're going to tell me that a steak sub is dangerous and you can't go into the store without without getting strapped down and all that kind of mess? Okay, whatever you say. You know, and these are the same people, now that everything is over, wanting to get on social media and talk smack. Well, I mean, you guys were out there not that long ago with guns. I mean, if y'all think y'all, you know, some kind of security patrol, militia, why don't y'all go out there and do anything? I didn't see any of y'all out there at any of these marches. So, I mean, it's easy to talk smack when you're sitting in your mama's basement eating a fruit roll-up. I wish I was out there. Well, if you wanted to be out there, nobody stopped you from going. You could have went out there. You could have done something, but you didn't. But then you want to sit here on social media and start, you know, dropping the N-word and talking about, you know, there's a beast and stealing and all those kind of stuff. Why don't you take your simple ass out there, your submachine gun, and do something? You know why you didn't do anything? Because those are props. They probably don't even work. You know, you want to be Vanilla ISIS, then go out there and do something. So I'm going to give you a list, not a long list, but I'm going to give you a list of riots that happened in this country that were instigated by white people. And you don't have to believe me. This is history. Pick up a history book. You got a computer. Your phone's a computer. You got Google. You can look it up. That's what I did. And I've done a few shows on race riots and all that kind of stuff. Did a show on Tulsa. Did a show on, and I'll get to that in the list in a few minutes. About 2 hours away from here is Wilmington, North Carolina. There was a riot down there. Matter of fact, we talked to the brother that made a documentary about the Wilmington riots and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, so these riots, I'm going to give you the list, were started by white people. So let's just stop pretending that, you know, Only black people riot. Only brown people riot. Only certain people riot. Everybody riots. Everybody does stuff. So get off your high horse. And, you know, you might want to take that stuff somewhere else. But, you know, people with a little bit of common sense knows better. So the first one, so there were riots during the Civil War era. The Civil War ran between 1861 and 1865. There was a Detroit race riot in 1863 and another one in 1863, New York City riots. Now, this was during the Civil War. And here are a few more. And most of these riots, I'm going to read you, were started by white folk. And there's, I mean, I'm sitting here looking at a list. That's a long list, and I can't, I'll be reading all these things until it's time to go. I can't read all these, but I did find a few that I'll read off to you. And if you, like I said, if you don't believe me, look it up. You can look this stuff up. The New Orleans Massacre of 1866, the Memphis Riots of 1866, the Pulaski Riot of 1868, the St. Bernard Parish Massacre of 1868, the Utah Massacre of 1870, the New York City Orange Riot of 1870, the Meridian Race Riot of 1871, statewide violence in South Carolina in 1876, Hamburg Massacre of Hamburg, South Carolina, 1876, Ellentown Riot, South Carolina, 1876. Let me check one thing right quick. There's something I got to do. Okay. Let me get back to this list. Like I said, it's a long list. Let's see, where did I stop? Okay. The Thibodaux Massacre of 1887. The first Omaha Race Riot of 1891. And that was 10,000 white people stormed the local courthouse to beat and lynch Joe Cole, alleged to have raped a white girl. And a lot of these race riots, a lot of them started off of lies. They think something happened. Time they just go find the closest black person they can get their hands on, and then they end up lynching them or whatever. The Wilmington Race Riot of 1898. A group of Democrats sought to remove African Americans from the political scene and went about this by launching a campaign of accusing African American men of sexually assaulting white women. About 500 white men attacked and burned Alex Manley's office, a newspaper editor who suggested African American men and white women had consensual relationships. 14 African Americans were killed. And you have to remember, back in those days, the Democratic Party is the same thing as the Republican Party of today. And that was in Wilmington, 1898. and I'm skipping over a bunch of these because there's too many to read. Little Rock, Arkansas. This is in 1906. Atlanta had a riot in September after two newspaper stories about African-American men assaulting white women. Anti-African-American violence broke out. Roughly 10,000 white men and boys took to the street, resulting in the deaths of 25 to 100 African-Americans, along with hundreds injured. The Slocum, Texas Massacre of 1910. East St. Louis, Illinois, 1917. On July 1st, an African-American man was rumored to have killed a white man. Violence against African-Americans continued for a week, resulting in estimations of 40 to 200 dead African-Americans. In addition, almost 6,000 African-Americans lost their homes during the riots, then fled East St. Louis. Red Summer of 1919. Tension in the summer of 1919 stemmed significantly from white soldiers returning from World War I and finding that their jobs had been taken by African-American veterans. And one that we've been talking about for a while. 1921, Tulsa race riot. Between May 31st and June 1st, a young white woman accused an African-American man of grabbing her arm in an elevator. The man, Dick Rowland, was arrested and police launched an investigation. A mob of armed white men gathered outside the Tulsa County Courthouse where gunfire ensued. During the violence, 1,250 homes were destroyed and roughly 6,000 African-Americans were imprisoned after the Oklahoma National Guard was called in. The state of Oklahoma reports that 26 African-Americans died along with 10 whites. They also dropped bombs on some of these black businesses and stuff on Black Wall Street from airplanes. Rosewood Massacre of Rosewood, Florida, 1923. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Watts Riot. Just, you know, me all day. 1968. That's when MLK was assassinated. And they just keep going and going and going. Rodney King, Crown Heights, Overtown, New York, Boston, Chicago, on and on and on and on and on. This past weekend, Charlotte, Ferguson, Milwaukee, Baltimore, Anaheim, Oakland, Cincinnati, St. Petersburg. I mean, the list goes on and on. And a lot of these riots started by white folk. So let's just get off your horse and just you know, step back and take a break. You know, like I said, it's easy to sit up there and call somebody whatever because you think the shit is cute. But y'all do the same thing. And then, please, don't let it happen. And don't, you know, hockey championship. Let's don't forget about those. And sports riots. Let's don't forget about those. Okay? So let's don't forget about that stuff. You know, don't sit there and pick and choose like some of y'all do the Bible. Pick and choose certain things you want to talk about. That's not how we get down here. So, just wanting to get that off my chest. I'm going to grab this. What is this clip? Okay, yeah. I'm going to grab this clip right quick. I'm going to have to do a part two on this, which is fine. But if I'm not mistaken, this clip is the what has happened that was in Hennepin County. This is the Hennepin County attorney talking about the arrest of the, let's just call them what they are, murderers. The police officers that murdered George Floyd.
All right, let's get right to Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman, who is standing by with news about charging.
Good afternoon. I'm Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman. I'm here to announce that former Minneapolis Police Officer Derek Chauvin is in custody. Former Minneapolis Police Officer Derek Chauvin has been charged by the Hennepin County Attorney's Office with murder and with manslaughter. Questions?
Yes, what charge of murder?
He has been charged with third degree murder. We are in the process of continuing to review the evidence. There may be subsequent charges later. I failed to share with you. A detailed complaint will be made available to you this afternoon. I didn't want to wait any longer to share the news that he's in custody and has been charged with murder.
Great.
What about the other three officers involved?
The investigation is ongoing. We felt it appropriate to focus on the most dangerous perpetrator. I must say that this case has moved with extraordinary speed. This conduct, this criminal action, took place on Monday evening, May 25th, Memorial Day. I'm speaking to you at 1 o'clock on Friday, May 29th. That's less than 4 days. That's extraordinary. We have never charged a case in that kind of time frame. And we can only charge a case when we have sufficient admissible evidence to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. As of right now, we have that.
Mike,
give her a follow-up. Go ahead.
Many people, including the mayor, have said that any other citizen with the video evidence available would have been arrested and held while awaiting charges earlier. Why didn't that happen in this case?
We have charged this case as quickly as sufficient admissible evidence to charge it has been investigated and presented to us.
Mike, you were saying yesterday that people's communication is going to take time. What's changed since yesterday and this morning that was this afternoon that now we're seeing murder charges against Chauvin?
Fair question. We have now been able to put together the evidence that we need. Even as late as yesterday afternoon, we didn't have all that we needed. We have now found it, and we felt a responsibility to charge us as soon as possible. Paul?
Yeah, Mike, what was the final piece? Do you now have some back on the mute?
Folks, I'm not going to talk specifically about this piece of evidence or that piece of evidence. You will see, and you all are veterans, I can only talk about what's in the complaint. You will see in the complaint the evidence and put it all together. We needed to have it all. Now, let me just quickly say we have evidence. We have the citizens' cameras, video, the horrible, horrific, terrible thing that we've all seen over and over again. We have the officer's body-worn camera. We have statements from some witnesses. We have a preliminary report from the medical examiner. We have discussions with an expert. All of that has come together, so we felt in our professional judgment it was time to charge, and we have so done.
Based on the other officer's role in the video, what criminal statutes could apply to those officers if it's not murder?
I'm not going to speculate today of the other officers. They are under investigation. I anticipate charges, but I'm not going to get into that. Today we're talking about former Officer Chauvin, which we believe has met the standards to be charged, and that's what we have done.
How closely did you look at the second degree statute, either intentional or unintentional, that on the surface seemed to fit this the videotape evidence we've all seen?
We have looked very closely at all statutes. This is what we've charged now. Investigation is ongoing. We have more discussions to do with our experts. This is the same charges that we made when we charged former Minneapolis police officer Mohammed Noor, the exact same third-degree charge and manslaughter charge.
I've seen you charge cases faster than 4 days. Are you saying that this is the fastest you've ever charged a police officer?
This is by far the fastest we've ever charged a police officer, okay? Normally, these cases can take 9 months to a year. We have to charge these cases very carefully because we have a difficult burden of proof. And let me just say something about that. We entrust our police officers to use certain amounts of force to do their job, to protect us. They commit a criminal act if they use this force unreasonably. We have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. The Hennepin County Attorney's Office is one of the few prosecutor offices in this country in the last 5 years to successfully prosecute a police officer for murder. And we did that on behalf of Justine Damon. Okay, that's unusual. We know how to do this. We have a very veteran prosecutor group aided by a very veteran investigator group at the BCA. On top of that, we've had great cooperation from the FBI and from United States Attorney Erica McDonald. And she may have some things to share with you soon, but she does that on her own timetable. I want to say to you that I'm very pleased about that level of cooperation, which frankly I will say to you doesn't necessarily happen in other jurisdictions, according to my friends and the national prosecutors. One last one.
That took months, close to a year. This takes days. Did public outrage play a role in the speed of this investigation?
I'm not insensitive to what's happened in the streets. My own home has been picketed regularly. My job is to do it only when we have sufficient evidence. We have it today. Mohammed Noor was a very difficult case. We didn't have the kind of videotape we need. And we didn't, and there was all sorts of other evidence that took us a long time. We do our level best to charge each case when we have the evidence to do it. But we cannot, and I will not allow us to charge a case until it's ready. This case is now ready, and we have charged it.
Mike, do you want to make clear that the complaint has not yet been signed, it's in process, and when it's done, when it's ready, we'll...
Good, thank you. Let me state on, so you have it. The complaint has been completed, and it is being processed now, and the signed copy will be made available to you today. Okay.
Have you given a statement to the investigators or the other three?
And that's it. That's Hennepin. You want to support Roller March Unfiltered? Be sure to join our Brain Defunct fan club. Every dollar that you give to us supports our daily digital show. There's only one daily digital show out here that keeps it black and keep it real. It's Roller March Unfiltered. Support the Roland Martin Unfiltered Daily Digital Show by going to RolandMartinUnfiltered.com. You can make this possible right now. We'll talk about the protesters. Thousands of protesters, folks, flooded the streets at the same intersection where George Floyd was killed, and that took place, the protest yesterday afternoon. They packed the area and were also spread out to try to be socially distant. Now, officers then showed up in riot gear. Y'all can roll the video, please. Officers showed up in riot gear and started firing tear gas and flash grenades as protesters hurled rocks, water bottles, and anything they could get their hands on towards the officers. Remember yesterday, Nakima Levy Armstrong, the civil rights attorney with the Racial Justice Network, she was on with us. She could barely hear us because the crowd was so loud. And so she joins us right now along with Leslie Redman, president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Nakima, first and foremost, people are still protesting today, but how long were you out there yesterday, and what precipitated Minneapolis police all of a sudden using tear gas and firing rubber bullets?
I was out there from about 5 p.m. until roughly 8 p.m., and it was a peaceful protest. I mean, thousands of people. It was actually the largest protest that I've ever been a part of, and it was amazing to see so many people out wearing their masks, standing up for justice. And the reality is that there were some folks who are, of course, extremely angry and outraged at what George Floyd experienced, and those people stayed around after the protest ended, and some of them broke windows out of the third precinct. Some of them also, you know, put graffiti on some of the walls around the precinct. And after a period of time, suddenly we heard a loud boom, and then we saw flashes of light, and then smoke clouds, which were tear gas, being thrown at protesters. There weren't any warnings. You know, folks just started experiencing being tear gassed. Police later shot rubber bullets and projectiles at people as well. They were in full riot gear.
And obviously, people have been talking about how that happened, but you didn't see the same reaction to cops when you had protesters in a state capital country.
Absolutely. I mean, we know that as people of color, when particularly black people, when we are rising up and we are standing up and protesting against police violence, we are going to be subjected to the potential for police abuse and harassment. I saw the same thing in Ferguson. We've had the same types of incidences happen in Minnesota when we've been protesting. So it doesn't come as a surprise that they're going to be fully ready and treat us like we're enemies of state. even though the whole reason that we're out there is to protest the conduct of state actors. So it's just, it's really ridiculous that protesters are treated this way. The overwhelming majority are peaceful. And even the ones who are upset about what's going on have a right to be upset because of the fact that George Floyd was unnecessarily murdered by the Minneapolis Police Department. So I don't fault those young people one bit. I don't condone, you know, any property destruction, but I also understand why they did what they did.
I now want to go to, of course, hear the NAACP there in Minneapolis, and that is Leslie Redman. Leslie, obviously, there are tensions. People are upset. People are angry about what is taking place. Now you have the mayor. I'm going to play in a second with the mayor. He is now pressuring the district attorney, saying these four cops should be charged with murder.
Yes, and it's the right move. I also want to make sure that we bring to attention Chief Arredondo, who is the first African-American chief of police that we've ever had in Minneapolis. And he was the one who made the call to fire those four officers. And this is something that was unprecedented. You never see almost a 24-hour turn. He takes bold, courageous statements and say, what we saw was horrendous, and we need to rectify this situation. And so that was a huge situation. That was a huge deal. And I think that it created a platform to make the right decision for calling for these officers to be prosecuted. And this is something that we've been calling for as well.
In fact, this is the mayor right here speaking today in his call for the DA to step up.
And I've wrestled with more than anything else over the last 36 hours one fundamental question. Why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail? If you had done it, or I had done it, we would be behind bars right now. And I cannot come up with a good answer to that question. And so I'm calling on Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman to act on the evidence before him. I'm calling on him to charge the arresting officer in this case. We cannot turn a blind eye. It is on us as leaders to see this for what it is and call it what it is. George Floyd deserves justice. His family deserves justice. The black community deserves justice. And our city deserves justice.
That, of course, is Mayor Jacob Frey there. Nakima, to Leslie's point, how quickly things move. Now, obviously, again, a firing is one thing, arrest, trial, and conviction is another. But I think this points to folks understanding public protest and pressure and why those things matter because of how fast this chief moved to fire these four cops.
Absolutely. We've been pounding the pavement here for the last 5 years, demanding police accountability, transparency, systemic reforms, and justice. And it was our activism and our advocacy that actually led to us having the first black police chief in the history of the city of Minneapolis. And because we have a black police chief who's connected to the community, we can actually pick up the phone and call the chief. We can text him. We can let him know about things happening in the community. And being able to connect with the chief, be able to present our perspective on what's happening played a role in the chief looking at this situation differently than other chiefs have in the past and showing courageous leadership by holding these cops accountable. It really should be a no-brainer for these cops to be fired, but it has been difficult, if not impossible, for an officer to be fired for killing a black person. I have not seen that happen. Most of the officers who have killed black people in the city of Minneapolis, they're still on the force to this day, still collecting a paycheck, preparing for a pension, which is completely unacceptable.
Sorry, Leslie, your response as well.
I couldn't agree with Nakima any more. I think that it is true, and people really do need to know that people on the ground have been fighting since Jamar Clark, right? We did justice for Jamar. That's what led to 18-day occupation in the 4th Precinct, and we will not stop fighting until Floyd gets justice. It's like Ida B. Wells, one of the founders of the NAACP. She used to say, a man was lynched today, and that's exactly what we saw. We saw a lynching without the rope, and enough is enough. Not only do we need justice for Floyd, but we need justice for the black community so that this can stop happening and we won't have to protest. The National NAACP started a hashtag, we are done dying, and I just want to echo those sentiments.
Obviously, the next steps. Have we heard from DA? Has the DA said anything? Nakima?
We haven't heard from Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman, who has a history of failing to hold police officers accountable. As a matter of fact, the only killer cop that he's held accountable was a black Muslim Somali man, Muhammad Noor, who I believe accidentally shot and killed an affluent white woman, Justine Damon. So his history is giving cops a pass, a slap on the wrist, et cetera. But tonight, people are at his house right now protesting outside of his house, demanding justice and demanding charges in this case. And I applaud them for going there. Sometimes you have to take the battle right to the front door of the person who is responsible for making the decision. And that's what needs to happen here.
Nakima Levy Armstrong, as well as Leslie Redman, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All
right, folks, we want you to support the black-owned company Seek. Mary Spiel, assistant.
Michael Freeman, the Hennepin County attorney, saying there is other evidence that doesn't support a criminal charge. I assume that was referring to the Minneapolis Police Department guideline for when a police officer could actually use a neck restraint or a chokehold in the course of an operation to subdue a suspect.
Well, that's one assumption. However, I'm left with a lot of questions still, Wolf, as to what precisely he was indicating. Remember, we're talking about the fact pattern here of a man who is on his stomach, handcuffed behind his back, breathing and gasping for air and being asked to be able to breathe longer. And so I'm not sure what he's referring to, but if you're talking about the police department's policy, one thing to point out is that there is an existing policy there where it says if there is an officer on scene who witnesses another officer using excessive force or force that no longer needs to be used to actually restrain the person or their movement, they have a duty to intervene. And what we're seeing here, which is quite compelling, is the idea that even if there was some moment in time during the course of the interaction of Mr. Floyd and the officers where he would have been needed to be restrained, well, that time had lapsed and the continued event was actually really telling to me. Also, the U.S. attorney made a comment, and the Hennepin County prosecutor kept referencing the success of this particular prosecutor's office in being able to prosecute effectively an attorney for excessive force. I will note that one of the things that he seems to miss in this is the climate here. We're talking about the idea of racism in America and the idea of police getting a very different benefit of the doubt depending upon the race of the victim. The case he's referring to involves a white Australian woman who was killed by a black officer. So there is a little bit of tone deafness and understanding what the appeal is and about the concerns of the community all across this globe, but particularly in Minneapolis, about what's happening here. But I note that he did, along with the U.S. attorney, mention ad nauseum about the idea of trying to make sure they could get it right the first time because of due process and also considerations of double jeopardy, because if they do not get it right, they won't have two bites at the apple.
Well, were you surprised, Laura, that there were no criminal charges filed against the police officer who had his knee on George Floyd's neck or the other three police officers who were just standing by and didn't stop it?
Yes, I am surprised that there have not been more of an urgency. Remember, they're talking about probable cause. Am I surprised that there's not yet a conviction? No, that does take time. And as a former federal prosecutor, I'm well aware about the distinction between meeting a probable cause standard and one meeting beyond a reasonable doubt. There is an evolution of evidence. There has to be the swift and meticulous you're talking about, the thorough. But you're talking about whether you believe, and he said himself, whether the force was excessive. He actually said, I believe that it was excessive force. Well, you're already in a different territory about probable cause. I suspect, however, Wolf, what the real calculation here is, knowing that there is an unlawful killing, which degree of crime are you going to talk about? Are you talking about one involving manslaughter, one involving a reckless disregard for human life? Are you talking about somebody intentionally committing this act? Are you talking about premeditation? And on that note, people often have the misconception that premeditation or first-degree murder involves a lengthy period of premeditation. The case, a prime example, is a hitman being contracted, when in reality, that premeditation, the intent to kill, can form quite rapidly and does not require that long duration of time. And because we see here, as you keep talking about and we're all talking about here, Wolf, the length of time that there was somebody's knee on another human being's neck to deprive them of air and essentially asphyxiate them in this way says that there was a lengthy period of time. But the fact that the FBI is involved and that the color of law is being mentioned is extraordinarily important. And to bring it full circle, color of law claims, Wolf, require only essentially that the officer is using his or her badge or his color of uniform to say, I'm going to be the sheriff in everyone's town. I can do what I want. I have carte blanche to harm anyone. I can murder or assault with impunity because I'm the officer. I'm the law of the land. Well, in reality, color of law says you cannot do that, and there is no requirement of there being a racial animus. So if the FBI is looking at it under the color of law context, the racial atmosphere and undertones we're all seeing and evaluating right now and sort of evidently there will not even be a consideration.
What's your reaction to the fact that no charges are being announced, at least not today?
Well, I'm going to leave that up to my colleague, Laura Coates, who I think explained that very well. But I think there is a frustration out there. Yes, people want this investigation to be handled properly. They don't want another Freddie Gray situation, as they mentioned in the press conference there. But I think people are frustrated at the urgency. How much more video do they need? I kept saying, as I'm watching this, like, is this some sort of a joke? Like, how much more video do they need? Okay, great, get more evidence. But from the evidence they have, there appears to be no area on tape anywhere from any witness that Mr. Floyd was resisting arrest in any way. So I think what people want to know is these officers, one of them with 18 complaints against him, I think 16 of them still open, another one that has six, other ones that have other complaints. I know that people complain and it's false sometimes, but 18 complaints, are they going to be arrested or are they not? Is the justice system going to work with these officers the way that it works with the general public? Someone accuses you of something, the police, guess what they do? They come to get you, they arrest you, and then you have to deal with the legal system. Are we going to have the same legal system for police officers that we have for the average adult? Now, for the Attorney General, I watched. I know she has a tough job, but guess what? And I'm just, as long as we're being honest with it right now, nobody wants to hear from the White House or the Attorney General right now. No one wants to hear from the man who wanted the death penalty to come back from the Central Park Five. No one wants to hear from the man who says that the former president was not born in this country. No one wants to hear from the man who says there are very fine people on both sides. Do you understand what I'm saying? No one wants to hear from the person that they perceive as contributing to this situation, situations like this in this society. Not directly, but allowing people like that to think that they can get away from this. No one wants to hear from the birther-in-chief, from the sons of bitches calling person who says that athletes who are kneeling for this very reason, no one wants to hear from that. The justice system should work for everyone. The President of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, should have the same system in place for everyone. That should be a given. You should not have to announce that at a press conference, and no one wants to hear that. Unless you're going to come out and say, I understand how African Americans feel in this country. I understand the mistakes that I have made with African Americans in this country. I understand that there is an election coming, but I don't just want your vote. I want you to understand that I know where you're coming from. We don't want to hear that. And that is the God's honest truth. So that was a misstep on her part. To come out and say, I want this to be investigated to the fullest extent of the law. We don't want to make any mistakes. Amen, sister. Amen, brother. But we don't want to hear all of that. Why don't you have the same urgency that you have for all of these people who are out there, most of them protesting, but there are some who are out there who are actually ravaging and pillaging? at least burning down stores. I don't know if it's by accident or what, or who are going in and raiding stores or what have you. Okay, fine, that should not happen. But what about the urgency for telling those people to calm down and we need peace, that same urgency when it comes to people who are being abused by the system, who are being abused by police officers, who are experiencing racism in this country and people are denying it? Where is that urgency? So I understand the anger of the people who are protesting, who are upset in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I am not condoning their actions. I don't understand the actions, but I do understand their anger when you feel you have nothing else, when you don't have a platform like a Don Lemon or a Wolf Blitzer or Laura Coates or anyone to protest, then what do? You act out in the way that you act out. Those people are upset. They are sick of it. And I would imagine people around the country are sick of it as well. Have that same urgency when you're telling people to calm down and don't be violent and don't go out and loot stores for racism and bigotry. Take the mask off.
You know, Don, what she did say, the U.S. Attorney Erica McDonald, was, and I know this is what you're reacting to, and I'm looking at my notes. She said, this is, in her words, a top priority for the Department of Justice here in Washington. And she said, the President of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, in her words, are directly and actively monitoring the investigation to determine whether any federal criminal laws were violated, including civil rights violations. That's what she specifically said. And you're
Where's the news in that? Well, the president should always be involved. The Justice Department should always be involved in these situations. That is not a headline. That is not something I felt that she even had to announce there. I don't understand why she announced it. You should leave the White House should be sending out a press release saying that, not just a tweet. If he wants to conduct business by tweet, then let the president tweet that out. But why does she need to say that? Is she his proxy? Does she speak for him? No. The president should send out a press release and say, I am monitoring what's happening here. I am dealing with it. This is a top priority. He doesn't need the U.S. attorney to do that. And again, I said what I said about this president and the environment that he has contributed to in this country. And that is the God's honest truth. That's how black people feel. The person who said from Klansmen and racists and Nazis and anti-Semites that there were very fine people on both sides. No one wants to hear that.
Reverend, you were in Minneapolis yesterday. What were people telling you?
People are angry. They are frustrated because this is not the first police killing that they've seen there and around the country. You know, Stephanie, I brought with me to Minneapolis the mother of Eric Garner, who in 2014 was killed by a New York City policeman and holding him in a chokehold, who said, I can't breathe. And I wanted to bring her because, one, she could identify with the pain. She and I spoke with the family, and she could communicate in a way that they would understand how all of a sudden you're in the middle of all of this. So when we got to Minneapolis and went to the scene where it happened and talked to hundreds of people, all I could hear was the anger and frustration of why they will not arrest the policeman. The tape is more than enough to establish probable cause. You do not need to prove beyond a reasonable doubt at this stage. All you need is probable cause to make an arrest, and there is no reason why these four policemen should not have been arrested by now. And for the prosecutor to come out yesterday afternoon and say in the press conference that there may be things on the tape that does not establish a crime, even though he cleans it up later, it only confirms the fears and the doubts of the people there in the community, which is why when I spoke with the governor yesterday, I suggested that he appoint the Attorney General Keith Ellison to investigate the case, because I don't know that the community or the nation can trust this prosecutor.
What did the governor say to that?
He said that at this point they were going to keep things where they were, and that he heard my plea in that, but we'll see where it goes. But I think that the fact that these are continual things, when we look at the uprising, when we look at the violence, and I agree with the mayor, everybody there is not a protester. Some of them could be from just taking the advantage of it. Others, we're hearing of some anarchist groups. But there are a lot of people angry and a lot of people rebelling that rebel different ways. We never see this, Stephanie, unless it's a police matter. If it's Watts in the 60s, if it's South Central riots or uprisings in the 90s, if it's Ferguson in the 2000s, it's always police matters. It's when people lose faith and confidence in the protection arm of their city, that's when you see them go to the streets. It's not economic issues. It's not other issues. It's always police matters that spark this, because that's when it becomes personal, that society is not protecting me, and those that should be protecting me have turned into the ones that are harming me.
Wes, to that very point, you say that you understand the calls for peace, but it's not that simple. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I share the calls for peace, and frankly, living in Baltimore and being from Baltimore, I've seen the firsthand implications, and we saw 5 years ago what happened after Freddie Gray, the long-term economic implications that we still continue to feel. But my question still is that while we are calling for this sense of tranquility and a status quo, where are our cries supposed to go when we still don't have a measure of justice? As Robert and I was saying, when we have had more reporters arrested at this point than police officers, than police officers who were actually involved in the thing that actually sparked this inside of the first place. And so it's important for people to understand that while we can call for a relative measure of peace, if we are not actually able to focus on the idea of systems change, if we're not able to understand the fact that race continues to show itself in every single way in our society, the way we saw it with Mr. Floyd and the way that he was policed, the way that you had a person who was in handcuffs, laying on his stomach, calling for his deceased mother, and still the officers did not see any form of humanity in him at that moment. In the way that people were being asked to live, in the way the conditions were asking people to exist in, you know, there's a Nigerian proverb that comes back to me, and it's this idea that a child who does not feel the warmth of the village will burn the village in order to feel the warmth of the fire. And we have a situation right now in this country, we have still yet to deal with these long-term systemic issues. We have yet to address the issue of race in our society and the fact that not all neighborhoods are policed differently. For many people, there's this tinge of horrific irony to hear calls for tranquility and status quo when justice has still not been delivered.
But to that Nigerian proverb, Reverend, we don't even know if it was that wronged child who burned the village. The narrative always jumps to blaming these protesters for burning and looting the buildings, but we don't know that it was them. How hard is it to get your head around all the chaos?
It is very hard, but those of us that have been in this for a while knows that this is always the case, because you have the protesters that are organized, that are very, very much committed toward getting justice, and then you have all kind of forces that come in for other agendas, and then you have those that are just naturally angry and will do reckless things. But what we do know is that the government's supposed to be organized. The breakdown started. The first act of violence, Stephanie, was the knee on the neck of this young man, Floyd. That we do know. And the government has not done what it should with probable cause on that situation. As Wes said, you can arrest reporters, and you can't arrest people that you see on tape that kills a man. Under no justification could you give to the public on why you kept your knee on a man's throat for 9 minutes. 9 minutes while people are saying you're hurting him, he's dying. He's calling on his mother, who is dead. You're seeing how destroyed he is. He's calling on his mama, who has died. He's saying, I can't breathe. If your training doesn't kick in, if your obligation as an officer doesn't kick in, do you have any humanitarian instinct in you? What are we looking at if we can allow that to go unanswered? That's where the rage is coming from.
Hey there, I'm Chris Hayes from MSNBC. Thanks for watching MSNBC on YouTube. If you want
The top story, of course, anger boiling over at this hour in the U.S. state of Minnesota and indeed across the country. Protesters torching a Minneapolis police precinct while thousands took to the streets demanding justice for George Floyd, a 46-year-old black man who died in police custody. The National Guard now deploying more than 500 soldiers to several cities. Now, social media has become a powerful tool for protest movements. Let's bring in CNN's chief media correspondent, Brian Stelter, to talk about its role in the Minneapolis story. But, Brian, before I do, the president's tweet, I think we need to deal with it. He tweeted just a short time ago, and I want to read the whole thing. He says, "I can't stand back and watch this happen to a great American city, Minneapolis. A total lack of leadership." And then he makes it political. "Either the very weak radical left mayor, Jacob Frey, gets together and brings the city under control, or I will send in the National Guard and get the job done right." As we've already said, the National Guard has already been ordered in and not by the president. This is interesting too, right. Part two. "These thugs," that is a loaded word in the United States, "are dishonoring the memory of George Floyd, and I won't let that happen. Just spoke to Governor Tim Walz, told him the military is with him. Any difficulty, we will assume control." And then again, an extraordinary line, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." The President of the United States. Brian, your thoughts?
The president is referring to something that Miami's police chief said in 1968 when there were a protest at an RNC convention. He said, "When the looting starts, the shooting starts." That was a threat back then, a statement about getting tough back in 1968, and it is a vile threat tonight. Let us hope that cooler heads prevail, that the president's aides intervene, that he's just acting tough on Twitter like he oftentimes does, and that nothing more will come of it. But if you wondered what the president was going to do in this case, if you wondered if he would show leadership in a volatile moment like this, I think we now have the answer, Michael. We're going to see the president resort to his typical techniques of sowing this kind of chaos and division, as you mentioned, using the word thugs, calling out these protesters. And by the way, the president's been late on this situation all week long, late to react to the video of what happened in Minneapolis, late to react to the protests and the unrest. You know, we are far past the point where the president should be weighing in for the first time on these matters. Clearly, the situation's out of control in parts of Minneapolis. The city of Minneapolis is doing a very bad job communicating with its own residents right now. Of course, under the cover of darkness, we don't know everything that's happening, but it is clear there are fires and looted stores and broken windows and other disturbances in multiple neighborhoods of Minneapolis right now. We'll have to wait until sunrise to get the full picture. Amid all of this, you have to wonder, if you live in Minneapolis right now, do you feel any better seeing the President of the United States talk the way he's talking on Twitter? I'm going to wager no, Michael, but let's see what the residents of Minneapolis say in the morning.
Yeah, saying again, any difficulty and we will assume control. I'm not sure how the federal government assumes control of something like this. I wanted to ask you about the issue of social media cell phone use as well, because all of this, George Floyd's death, was on camera and filmed by people who were eyewitnesses to this, and you know, it's not like George Floyd's didn't happen before. They have happened before. They're now just getting filmed, and speak to the role of the cell phone in this, but also the role of the cell phone in spreading the protest.
Right, this death was filmed from multiple angles, and this is not the only altercation with police just this week in the United States that's been caught on camera and caused a lot of concern in local communities. We are seeing protests, as you mentioned, in other cities. That is a result of what happened in Minneapolis, but it is also the result of other videos in other cities on other days, this kind of cacophony that's created when you have access to these images on social media. It is also notable that in this age, both of social distance and social media, people are able to move more quickly toward these protests. So you see a kind of virality that happens not just online, but in person. When people, for example, in St. Paul, Minnesota, heard that the third precinct was on fire in Minneapolis, some got in their cars and drove over to Minneapolis a couple of hours ago. So there's that kind of effect of making these bigger and moving and escalating more quickly that happens in the age of cell phones and instant technology. I think there are obviously positives to that and negatives to that as well. We have, by the way, the front page of Friday morning's Minneapolis Star Tribune, reacting to this in real time, calling this a state of agony. And then that's really important. As much as we're talking about anger here, an overwhelming amount of anger in the streets, it's also about grief and agony. We are talking about a population that has been mostly indoors and stuck at home for months, and now seeing the people that they trust to protect them fail them. And that kind of situation causes anger, but it also causes agony. To see this in the midst of a pandemic, to see people posting videos of fires with a quarantine sort of logo, it is an incredibly strange and frightening situation, Michael.
Okay. It's 8:30. The show is officially done. I had one more clip to play, but I'm good. I don't have to play it. So we're going to end the show tonight right on time, which is good. I'm on my way to work. I'm going to see how these roads look. I don't think they had anything going on today, so I'll see how this is going to look. Next week, I'll keep you posted on the homegoing of George Floyd. I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if they're going to have it on TV or whatever, but I'll see if I can find out what's happening, and I'll try to keep you posted on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, and I'll report it back to you next week. So until then, I'll be back next week. Hopefully everything will cool down and we can get back to trying to figure out how to solve these problems. But until then, I will talk to you next week. Peace out.